Thank you for listening to this Podcast One Sportsnet production, available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He started in a small town in Texas. Worked his ass off to become one of the most famous wrestlers of all time.
We're gonna take care of business tonight, and that's the bottom line.
And now, he's dominating the world of on-demand audio.
And he's doing it for the working man.
This is a damn good outlet for me to spew the bullshit off my brain.
Yeah!
This is the Steve Austin Show. Unleashed.
Unleashed.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Steve Austin Show. I am coming to you from the Broken Skull Challenge compound out here in Agua Dulce, California. I am sitting in my camper, and I am sweating bullets because it's hotter than fucking here. I'll tell you what, it's summertime, we're in the desert on a mountain, and a heat wave just blew in. So it's not just hot, it's extra hot. And the reason I'm sitting here sweating bullets is because I got my air conditioner turned down, so you don't hear a bunch of blowing and discombobulation in the background, and you can hear my voice. Son of a bitch. Hey, let me tell you about this camper real quick. I sent a picture out on my Instagram account the other day, Steve Austin BSR, and everybody said, hey, goddamn, that's a nice camper. Badass. Hey, man. Well, it is a nice camper, but here's the thing. I don't own this thing. The production company is leasing it for me while I'm out here filming. I'm just staying in the motherfucker. It ain't my camper. Now, no doubt, it is a nice, high-quality camper, and I am enjoying my stay. I'm cooking all my meals on a grill. I got my Kawasaki mules. It's beautiful outside. Nice people. Great athletes. Filming the toughest show on television, Broken Skull Challenge. It's going to start airing in September. So, man, I'm in a real good place. But I wasn't in a good place a few goddamn hours ago. I decided to just a while ago, I was going to take a ride on my Kawasaki mule. I normally do that every single night. I'll take a ride on my mule just to go chill out, relax, and get my head together. When you're out here in the desert yelling at a bunch of people all the time and, you know, instructions and orders and how the challenges go and all that shit, just kind of want to decompress a little bit. Many of you people know I love people, but also I like to be alone. So that's kind of my time to unwind when I ride that mule. Well, I figured, hey, man, this is a good chance to do your open and close of your podcast. Why don't you just stay here at the camper and cook your chicken and your salmon? That's what I eat every single night, every single day. So I said, that's the plan, dude. We'll stay here. We'll get it done. I was wondering what the fuck I was going to talk about on my open, because all I do out here is work right now and motivate people and yell at them in a good way. So I was like, okay, what to talk about on my podcast? I came in the kitchen. I got out my chicken breasts, four of them, put some chicken rub on them, busted out a piece of salmon from the refrigerator, put some chicken rub on that. Yes, I use the same rub on both foods. And I said, man, I'm going to take me a 1.5 liter bottle of Trader Joe's water out there and just stand by my grill and watch the sun go down. There's something about the sun going down out here. It's just magical. It's hotter than fuck during the day, but when that sun goes down, it's really magical and it's peaceful. There's no sirens, ain't no helicopters, there's no bullshit. Just me and my grill. It kind of makes me miss Hershey a little bit because Hershey used to come out here with me when I first started filming us first two seasons. But I got a picture of Hershey right over here to the left side of me. I want to thank old Johnny Seven over there in the UK. He drew a picture of Hershey for me, and he captured her just perfectly. Her eyes, her nose, her ears, and her mouth, the way she held it. I tell you, it's just, I can feel her presence in that picture. It's such an accurate drawing. Thank you, Johnny. That's a badass drawing. But anyway, back to the story. So I got Hershey out here in spirit, and I'm putting all the shit on my chicken and my salmon, and take my Trader Joe's water, and I'm out there. I got my Traeger grill growing at 350 degrees. I preheated it. I put all the chicken breasts and the salmon on there, and I'm good to go. I'm sitting there relaxing, taking a swig of my water. You got to drink a lot of water out here when you're in the desert, folks, because it's hotter than blazes. You're very active. If you don't drink a shit pile of water, you'll get dehydrated. So at nighttime, I drink a shitload of water. And there I was, cooking chicken, salmon, enjoying myself. Out there in the, almost in the woods, we're on a big movie lot. It's a couple hundred acres big, backed up to the mountains. I'm just minding my own business. Ain't bothering nobody. Everything is good in my world. All of a sudden, I'm standing there, smelling my chicken and my salmon cook, looking at my timer. Okay, it's got more cooking to do. And I got my tennis shoes and my socks on. I just got off work, not too far before that. And I think, man, my feet are kind of itching. And I said, man, that ain't really like an itch. They're kind of really starting to hurt. And I kind of rub one ankle against my foot. And I did the other one. Should I look down? I'm standing right in the middle of a big-ass pile of fire ants, and they are fucking whooping my ass. I mean, these some bitches. Okay, here we are. I'm fighting with a bunch of fire ants. So basically, we're in a match. So they're playing the heel. I'm playing the part of the white meat baby face. And them some bitches, if we're going to have a match, how about shine me up a little bit? Maybe we do a little bit of Shane wrestling. Maybe a couple of high spots. Make me look good. No. These motherfuckers bypassed the shine spot and decided to go ahead and open up a set of heat on Steve Austin. Shit. Them things was kicking my ass, stinging the shit out of me. I was selling like Ricky Morton in a sold-out house. White meat baby face. And I'm thinking to myself, now, you know, I'm dumb for standing these damn ants, but I ain't stupid. Stupid would be standing there longer so they can continue to kick my ass. And, you know, it's one thing if I'm going to bother the ants, if I had intended to bother them, that they would sting me. But I'm just standing out there trying to grill my salmon and my chicken. Ain't trying to bother nobody. I'm sorry, ants, if I have invaded your territory. I'm just passing through. About a 30-day stay, and I will be off and out of your way. But no, these ungrateful, sorry motherfuckers don't want to shine me up. They go to work on my feet, my toes, my ankles. They're beating the fuck out of me. I didn't even get a shine spot. So I figured, okay. I yanked off my socks. I yanked off my shoes. I beat my shoes together to get all the damn ants off of them. And I said, well, shit. I ain't got no gasoline to put on them. I ain't got no ant spray to put on them. I ain't even got a fly swatter if I wanted to hit them on the ground. I'm not going to sit there and beat them with my damn shoes that I just took off. So I'm thinking, what can I do to extract some revenge? What can I do to make some type of comeback? Because they drew first blood. That's what Rambo said. That's what John J. Rambo said. They drew first blood, not me. Well, motherfuckers, you drew first blood on Steve Austin, and I don't take that too lightly. Motherfuckers going to sting in my feet when I'm just trying to grill some salmon and some chicken? Uh-uh. You ain't going to get away with it. So I said, well, shit, I ain't a rocket scientist. How do you whip up a comeback on about 400 ants? I said, I got it. I got it. I'll work up a number six on them. A number six, you ask? What's that? Well, here's what a number six is. It's a Blazing Saddles reference if you missed it. I took a small piece of chicken. I laid it on the ground. Yep, them motherfuckers came swarming. As soon as a bunch of them got on it, I put that damn piece of chicken in a Ziploc bag. I came into my camper. I opened the door, and I laid on the floor. And those ants were crawling around inside that Ziploc bag. They thought they made out like a bandit with a big-ass piece of chicken. Ah-ah! Not so fast, motherfucker. I would reach into the Ziploc bag with my thumb and my pointing finger and pull out one ant at a time. I would sit their little sorry ass on the camper floor and thump their ass right out of the fucking trailer. Here's the thing. There was probably 300 or 400 ants outside on my little chicken bait that I fixed.
I probably got about 40, 45 of them. I thumped every one of those cocksuckers in the skull. I don't know if I killed them, if I gave them a concussion, or if I just knocked the wind out of them. But I got my comeback in. And then I hit the floor, and I said, God damn it, motherfuckers, bring it on. Not another single ant stepped up to take my challenge. Anyway, it's a bullshit story, but it's a true story. They was kicking my ass there for a second. And here's, goddamn, man, the whole coup on this thing is my chicken got ready. My salmon was ready. I got this little thermometer that you stick in the meat. I've never had one in my life. I've seen them. I've seen people that have them. I've seen them on TV. I've always cooked things by eye. So I took my little gauge out there and I stuck that thing in the chicken and the salmon. Hell, it was ready. So I started pulling my chicken and my salmon off. And I'll be goddamn, these tongs, I'm not used to using these tongs yet. And I'll be goddamned if I didn't drop a big ass, juicy piece of chicken right on dirt, right on the ground. I said, motherfucker. I picked it up with the tongs and put it back on my plate. As soon as I put it on my plate, the sumbitch fell back off. Two times I dropped that chicken breast. Y'all know the 3-second rule, 4-second rule, what's it called? When you drop something on your kitchen floor, do you eat it or do you throw it away? Fuck. I'd already lost a chicken breast previously in the back of the grill. That's what was baiting the ants in, that char grill piece of chicken that I dropped about 5 days ago. So I said to myself, as cheap as I am, if you know this podcast, you know I'm a cheap motherfucker. I don't waste no money. So I said, no, you ain't going to waste another chicken breast. You drop that one in the back of the grill, you lost that. You're not going to lose one by dropping it on the dirt. You can eat some dirt, you fucking pussy. Just take it in there, clean it off, and you'll be good to go tomorrow. So I gathered up my chicken. I got my salmon. I put a bag of spinach in the microwave. And I said, okay, well, how am I going to go about washing this piece of chicken down so it doesn't have any germs, any dirt, any bullshit from all the people that have been out here before me? And I'm thinking, well, shit, you know, you could dust it off with a napkin or a paper towel. And I said, that dirt's kind of in there real good. And I said, well, if you just hold it under the water, just wash it off like a dish. So I turn the water on in the sink and I start washing the chicken breast off of it. Now I'm washing off all my damn chicken rub and all my seasonings and everything, but I don't want to waste or lose that piece of chicken. So I'm washing that bitch off. Then I start to thinking about it. After I got it all cleaned up, I'm thinking I did pretty good. But then I'm thinking, hey, dude, this ain't your trailer. You lease this trailer, or the movie company, the production company's leasing his trailer from someone who provides it. You don't know who usually fills this trailer up with the water. Is it potable? I drink drinking water out here. When I'm brushing my teeth, I rinse my mouth out with the water from the trailer, but I don't drink it. Now, you're taking something that you was going to eat, washing it, bathing it with your hands, seemingly taking all the dirt from outside off of it when you don't know where the water's been that you're washing it with. So I want you to know that it chapped my ass to have to throw away a damn good chicken breast because I didn't know where the water supply came from. Now, I would rather be safe than sorry. I don't know what has come out here in the desert of Agua Dulce on this mountaintop where we filmed Broken Skull Challenge, and shit or pissed all over the place where I got my camper parked, but I wasn't going to take no chances. And I don't know what the soil is out here, and goddamn it, I sounded like a damn pussy, not eating a dirty chicken breast, then washing it in my sink and not wash it because I washed it in the sink and I don't know where the water came from. Hell, you got to figure, had I ate that piece of chicken tomorrow with that dirt on it, with the water on it, what if I got some kind of crazy stomach cramps or virus and I wouldn't have been able to continue shooting because I've been here shitting like a crippled goose because I ate all that bullshit. I couldn't take that chance, folks. I got to keep filming the toughest show on television out here for CMT. All of a sudden, all the damn contestants going to say, well, where are we at? Where's Steve at? I thought we was going to do some challenges. No, Steve can't work today. He's shitting like a crippled goose because he ate some dirty chicken that he washed in his sink. I can't have my reputation tarnished by that kind of story. It happened to me. I lost a chicken breast, but I ain't going to get no goddamn stomach cramps from it. And now here's a word, just here's a quick word to those ants out there Don't ever fuck with me again. If you want to fuck with me, let's do some chain wrestling. Let's do some shit. Let's entertain the people. There ain't really nobody out here. But let's entertain each other. Let's have a proper match. You don't just jump me from behind and start stinging the shit out of me and working up a set of heat on me. You shine me up. Give me a couple of high spots. Make me look good. Get my shit in. Then you get some heat. I'll sell like Ricky Morton in a sold-out house. And then I'll make my comeback. Because when you piss me off, you pissed off the man that used to be the toughest motherfucker in the history of the WWF. And that's something you just don't do. So that is a word of warning to the ants that just whooped my ass. Well, now that I got that story out of the way, I just drank some water from Trader Joe's. Let me get a move on. There was actually some business I needed to take care of. I got to give you guys a heads up. You got to download the new Podcast One app. You can get it at the App Store or Google Play. And you need to download it so you can check out all the 360 videos on it. There's over 1,000 of them, and you can watch some of your favorite podcasts in virtual reality video. And it's just like you're right there in the studio with them. And the app also lets you access behind-the-scenes pictures and bonus content, and you can comment and post your own stuff, too. And then you can connect with other fans of the show. Ain't another podcast app like this sumbitch anywhere. So get to the App Store or Google Play and download the new Podcast One app right now. Hey, gang, I've been promising you guys I was going to run more of your phone calls, and today is the day. You guys lit up the phone lines the night I was in the studio. We talked about all kinds of stuff, including a lot of pro wrestling. Now, I didn't really have a set agenda or topic that night, so the conversations really cover a lot of different ground. But I had a blast talking with everybody, and I want to do more call-in shows in the future. So thank you to all of you who took the time to call in a few weeks back. And we're going to roll those calls coming up here in just a second. But I can't roll them calls until I talk about you want to buy a new or used vehicle. Because if you are, then you need to check out TrueCar or download the TrueCar app. When you register with TrueCar, you'll see what other people in your local area paid for the car you want. And from there, you can connect with a local TrueCar certified dealer and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. TrueCar shows you real pricing on actual inventory, so you see competitive pricing offered to you by TrueCar certified dealers for vehicles that are actually on their lots. And you'll also see all the dealer incentives before you get to the lot, so you can feel confident about the price when you show up. TrueCar makes car buying easy. No matter if you're looking for a brand new or a used vehicle, and the stats don't lie, over 3 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. There are over 13,000 dealers in that network with some 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available. So do yourself a favor and go to TrueCar for your next car buying experience. TrueCar doesn't just make the process easier, it'll also save you some money. TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a better car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.
Hey, it's Adam Carolla. Now, if you're hearing my voice, it means you like podcasting. And if you like podcasting, well, then you're going to love my show. Lots of funny segments, good bits, great guests, and of course, moi. That's Mexican for me. So check it out at Podcast One, iTunes, or wherever you listen to fine podcasts. The Adam Carolla Show. Throw it on your phone. It's free.
Steve Austin, Unleashed.
Unleashed.
All right, here we go. Taking your phone calls and starting with Brennan. Hey, Brennan, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Brennan, what the hell are you doing tonight?
Nothing, just playing some guitar.
What kind of guitar are you playing over there?
2012 Gibson SG Standard.
How long have you been playing?
About 5-6 years.
Who you look up to on the guitar? Who's your influences?
Angus Young from AC/DC.
Oh, man, I said some heavy-duty basic stuff. I dig it.
My absolute favorite guitarist of all time.
Hey, man, how long have you been listening to the show?
Oh, actually, this is my first time actually officially listening because I could never, ever get through.
Well, I'll give you an oh hell yeah. Hey, what'd you want to talk about tonight?
I just wanted to know if you could go back in time and fight someone you've never fought before, who would that be and why?
God dang, man, that's a good question. But right off Jump Street, if I went back to recent history, I got to say Hulk Hogan, because one of the biggest draws in the history of the business. Everybody thought that match between Stone Cold Steve Austin and Hulk Hogan should have happened a couple of years back and never did. Just for whatever reason, and I didn't feel like stepping back in the ring, and I think Hogan was ready to go, but I wasn't. And so I never got a chance to wrestle that guy, and it would have been fun to be in the ring with him, because I was watching an old match on YouTube between Paul Orndorff and Hulk Hogan, and I watched
how Hulk Hogan was down there on that mat and he was just selling his ass off and Paul Orndorff was just kicking the snot out of him. And then finally, after all this heat, started making that trademark comeback. And this was actually a town in Canada, Brennan. It was in Toronto at a big outdoor arena, I believe. And there was a lot of people there. He started firing up that comeback. The people were going crazy. And, you know, I realized, I said, you know, that guy wasn't born on top. He worked his tail off to get to the top. And so I'd say Hulk Hogan right off Jump Street. And then, man, just because Bruno Sammartino was so highly respected way back in the day, if I could go back in time to throw another guy on the list, it would be a guy like Bruno Sammartino. Oh, yeah. And I would say, you know, Ric Flair is my favorite pro wrestler in the history of the business. I think he's the greatest world champion of all time. But I actually wrestled Flair. Now, he wasn't at his prime. I wasn't at my best. So the program could have been outstanding had we been focused on each other and running in a long storyline. But I got a chance to wrestle Ric Flair, so I can't put him on the list. But he's probably the best that ever's done it. And then a guy that I think was about 20 years before his time, superstar Billy Graham. Now, there was a guy that was kind of, he was really the first Stone Cold Steve Austin, but they didn't see that in him back in the day. And so, you know, Bob Backlund became the champion and, you know, superstar went on his way. But God dang, there would have been a guy, and probably because of the way things are going, it would have been interesting to see who would have been the heel and who would have been the baby in that match. But those are a couple of guys right off Jump Street that I can think of. And when I say, you know, those names, I got to throw Steamboat in there because I had so many great matches with Steamboat. But just to get in there with Steamboat or the likes of like a Bret the Hitman Hart one more time, you know, that would be good. But obviously that will never happen. Those guys have, you know, went down their way and I've gone down my road.
Yeah.
Hey, man, good luck to you and with that guitar playing and stick with it.
Hey, one more thing, Steve.
Yeah.
Can I please get a hell yeah?
Hey, Brennan, over in Winnipeg, Ken, I appreciate you calling the show. It's the first call I've taken in 2 years. Oh, hell yeah.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks so much.
Yeah, take care, Brennan. I'll catch you down the road. Oh, yeah, let's go Jonathan Fresno. Hey, John, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, sir?
Hey, man, you want to talk about the keto diet, I hear.
I do. First of all, it's a pleasure to speak with you, and thank you for the years of entertainment and work you provided. Wrestling, I met you years ago, like 98, at a local show here. It was a pretty cool thing. Got a picture taken with you. And also, thanks to your wife. You'd mentioned she was a special ed teacher. I have a special needs child. So very cool that she did that. So thank you.
Hey, man, my wife is a special person, and I think her background and training probably one of the biggest reasons we're still married today. So I appreciate you following me all these years. I appreciate you calling in today. What do you want to talk about as far as the keto diet?
So I'm wondering how it's going. Are you doing straight-up keto? Are you doing a carb load? You know, where do you stand with that?
Man, I'm doing standard keto diet, SKD. It's not the CKD or the other one. Man, I'm becoming pretty well-versed in this stuff. I'm counting macros. I'm probably between 3,000 and 3,500 calories a day. I'm usually between 200 and 230 grams of protein a day and usually around 230 to 260 grams of fat per day. My net carbs are always very low. I'll eat a couple of servings of spinach or some asparagus or have a small salad at dinner. So, man, I'm heaping in the fats there. The biggest thing about the keto diet for me is it's such a it'll mess with your mind because always being an athlete and being used to bodybuilding-type diets, although I've never been a bodybuilder, I'm used to counting macros as far as proteins and carbohydrates. So this is the first time. I'm still looking at the proteins, but they're kind of an after fact. And now as I'm focusing on the fats, and, you know, it's a whole different style of eating. I had the crash when I first started the thing, and I kind of got the brain fog or the keto flu, whatever you want to call it. Then I actually caught the real flu on top of that. But so far, it's been pretty effective. I've been doing it for when I sold my ranch. I was driving back from Texas, and I was stopping at a burger joint, Sonic's and stuff like that, and just getting hamburger patties and throwing the rest of it away so I could. I kind of started flirting with it then. And then really have been almost scientific on it for the last month and a half. I started, John, at about 267 or 268. Right now, as I talk to you, I clocked in this morning at 255. It's been very interesting. Once I reach my goal weight, I'll transition back into kind of like, you know, a 33-33-33 type diet. This has been a real effective, but I don't think I'll stay on it for the rest of my life. But once I get to my desired weight, which I think is going to be 245 to 250, I think 245, and then we'll go from there. I might even go down to 240. But once I hit that, then I'll make a slow adjustment and start bringing carbs back in and doing just kind of a traditional diet at that point. And one of the things, John, that I got away from, and I don't know where you're at with this, but one of the things that I got away from was all my cardio. And when I stopped doing that cardio, along with the hunting season at the Broken Skull Ranch, man, everything just kind of started creeping up the scale. And start with the employment of the cardio, with the keto and the strategy, and you know, lost the water weight. It's been very effective for me. Are you using this type of diet?
Well, you know, I'm looking at starting it this week. I had done years ago the old anabolic diet with Mario DePasquale, where you do the keto during the week and you carb load like Saturday or Sunday. Like you, I mean, you have a program you're training for. I'm training for a vacation. You know, we're going to the beach in the summer, so that's my project. And so I was going to start the keto tomorrow and start going hardcore for the next 6 weeks. And my cardio has been good. I've been keeping up with that. But like what are you doing for training now? I mean, are you doing like, you know, as far as your workouts, are you incorporating like a fat burning thing in your weight training?
No, man. I'm still trying to build mass on my workouts. Now, I'm probably not going to build mass because I'm at a caloric deficit. But I'm not going super heavy because I had both shoulders rebuilt. So I'm training for a pump. I'm trying to get, you know, 8 to 10 reps out of a set. If I get higher than that, you know, I need to add more weight. If I get lower than that, then I need to lighten the bar. So my training is just for a pump. I'm not going to be Mr. Olympia. I've recognized that a long time ago. So I'm just training to stay healthy, keep some blood moving, and keep the joints good. Hey, let me say this to you, John, before you jump into the keto diet. Here's the thing that I realized when I got into the middle of this and started reading, and I should have known it a long time ago. Whether you stick with what you're doing now or you go to the keto, there's no magic bullet. Like, you know, you're either at a caloric deficit or you are not. You're either working out enough or you're not. Or your caloric intake is too high, or it could in fact be too low, because I think I've been there where my body weight just kind of stalled and I needed to add calories. So the thing about this is, if you're traveling, if you're a guy, if you're single, you hate to cook, this thing is easy as hell to follow. Now, on the other hand, you know, I miss my oatmeal a little bit. I don't have sugar cravings. I don't have carb cravings. I don't, nothing like that. But to me, it's a little bit easier to be able to eat anything you wanted with respect to having the carbs as well, but employing that cardio. But there's not a magic bullet. There's a trade-off whether you go keto or you stay on a regular carb-protein diet. You just got to do the work and watch your numbers. Do you follow me?
Yeah, I do. Absolutely. You got to miss the Broken Skull IPA, though.
I do. I just brought my producer Stacy a six pack of them and the Big Bomber bottle. So she's got a bunch of beer that she's going to be drinking. That's been one of the hard things that I've gotten away from, is not being able to drink any beer. So I'll drink a shot or two of whiskey here or there. But if you do keto, you will notice that the effects of alcohol are greatly amplified, because you will catch a buzz really, really quick. But hey, man, I appreciate you calling into the show.
Hey, sir, thank you for everything. Appreciate everything you've done. Love the show. Been listening to it from the start. Fan for years. You know, keep it up, man. Good luck.
Take care, John. Good luck. Let's go to Michael in England.
Hello, Steve. You okay?
Hey, Michael, what's up, mate?
I just want to ask you about, from Liverpool, UK, just want to ask you your favorite match with The Undertaker.
My favorite match with The Undertaker. God dang. You know, I had so many with that guy on the road. I had several high-profile pay-per-view matches with him. Probably Hell in the Cell would be one that most people would remember. I got knocked out in that match. I don't remember the second half of that match. It wasn't my best performance because I got flashed. I would say my favorite match with The Undertaker was actually in a small town in Pennsylvania. I had just come back from getting dropped on my head, almost got paralyzed, and they started putting me in some matches after several months of being off. I was in a six-man tag match. Undertaker, myself, and someone else against three other guys. I can't remember who the other guys were. And I wasn't really supposed to go out there and take very many bumps. But due to the excitement of the crowd, all of the Austin 316 shirts. I said, man, I got to go out there and take a bump. So I tagged in, ran a high spot, took a couple of bumps, and tagged out. As the other guy went in the ring, I stepped onto the apron, and Undertaker looked at me with that look that only he can give and said beneath his breath, what in the hell do you think you're doing? And it was the fact that the legendary dead man actually cared that I went in there and I could have potentially been hurt, and he showed some compassion for his fellow teammate in the middle of a six-man match in a small town. It's probably Hershey, Pennsylvania. I thought it was awesome, and that's one of the reasons I got so much respect for the guy. So I didn't give you the answer you were looking for, but that is my favorite match with The Undertaker, believe it or not. Hey, man, thanks for calling in. I'll catch you down the road. Let's go to Philly. Hey, Steve, what's happening?
Not much.
What brings you to the telephone line today?
I wanted to ask you if you know if the Stone Cold podcast will be coming back to WWE Network anytime soon.
Man, I don't know. That's a good question. We signed up for 12 of those. We did 12, and then we stopped. So, you know, we'll see if talks continue and sign that thing back up or do not. But we fulfilled them, and then we stopped.
Okay.
Did you enjoy the Stone Cold podcast?
Yeah, so the main reason I signed up for the network.
Oh, man. Well, do you listen to the regular podcast?
Yeah, I gotta listen to those every week.
Well, hey, man, I appreciate you calling in the show.
Okay. Take it easy.
Take care, man. Well, let's go to Pennsylvania. Nathan.
Hey, Steve. How you doing?
Hey, man, I appreciate you being so patient and hanging on over there in Pennsylvania.
Hey, not a problem. First of all, I just want to say it's an honor being on the line with the global icon and national treasure, such as yourself.
Hey, man, what's on your mind? What do you want to talk about, Nathan?
Well, my question for you is, I know you talk a lot about growing up and watching World Class and how you love to go back and watch Mid-South Power Pro and whatnot. So my question would be, if you can go back in time and work in any territory at its absolute height, which one would it be? Would it be World Class with, the Von Erichs down there and the Freebirds? Or, would it be Mid-South? You got JYD, Freebirds there as well. Or maybe NWA with the Horsemen and Dusty, Nikita, Rock and Roll, Midnight. Got a couple good options there, I guess. So if you could go back in time, which one would it be?
Man, I'm going to have to go the best of both worlds. I'm going to give you two answers because I can't just pick one. And out of all the stuff that just came out of your mouth, you've obviously listened to the show for a long time, or you've heard me talk about these territories. All of them were A+, but if I had to pick, I'd go Mid-South because I wanted to work for Bill Watts when he was the creative force that he was, and that whole territory was just running white hot, and they had some of the best damn workers there, and it was just a kick-ass style, and Jim Ross was cutting his, teeth on learning the broadcast business. Everybody there was just on fire. But then, man, when you talk about the NWA, they had that mystique just kind of like nobody else did. And both territories back in the day, this was when wrestling was really perceived as being real to myself. So I bought in hook, line, and sinker because of the believability factor, because of the way they're presented. It was presented like a shoot, like it was a damn sport. And wins and losses mattered. And good guys and bad guys, the good guys were selling, the bad guys were getting heat. Heat existed. Kayfabe existed. And so I would pick those two territories in the mid-80s.
I had a feeling you were going to say Mid-South. I guess my follow-up question would be, given, the Watts rules and whatnot, you got your babyface hotels, you got your heel hotels, you better not get your ass whipped in a bar somewhere. You might be looking for a new job. You think you would have thrived under those conditions, or you think that would have been something you dug?
No, I would have definitely thrived under those conditions. I wouldn't say it was as similar in USWA. None of the guys were really, some of the guys were getting into the fights. I think USWA was never the territory. Well, I got to say that with all due respect because of Lawler and Dundee and all the greats over there. But, yeah, I would have thrived in that territory. It would have been great being, listening to the wisdom and tutelage of Bill Watts, being able to talk with Jim Ross, back in the day. But Stone Cold Steve Austin, as hungry as I was back in the day, coming up, Steve Williams, Steve Austin, Stunning Steve. Who knows what I would have become under Bill Watts or, what I would have transformed myself into back in the day. The reason I became Stone Cold Steve Austin was unique to my situation when I joined the then WWF. Going back to those days, yes, I would have thrived. Who knows if I would have been as big as I ended up being in WWF slash E, but I would have damn sure been, you know, a hungry guy in that card trying to fight my way to the top of the card just like everybody else. Yes, I would have thrived because that is my competitive instinct in anything that I do.
Yeah, I don't doubt that for a second. Well, I'm gonna get off the line here. I know you got other callers, but gotta say, man, I love getting two cans of audio whoop ass every week from you. So keep up the great work, and I'll be listening every week.
Nathan, take care of yourself. I appreciate you calling in. All right, we're gonna get to more of your phone calls right after I give big ups to my former roommate and close personal friend Diamond Dallas Page and his DDP Yoga. Hey, gang, guess what? DDP is hitting the road. His ass is going to do the DDP UK tour, and you can take part in his inspirational Q&A live shows in Glasgow, Manchester, Birmingham, and London. My buddy DDP is going to be telling stories, signing autographs, taking selfies, if you will, and he's going to motivate the living heck out of you to live the healthiest life you can. Dallas is kicking off his Hall of Fame UK tour on September 8th in Glasgow. And one of his infamous DDP yoga workshops will be included too. Get in on Dallas's inspiration meets perspiration workshop and let him help your ass achieve your fitness goals and get on the path to healthier living. Reserve your spot now at ddpuktour.com. ddpuktour.com. And if Dallas ain't going to be in a city near you, then download the DDP Yoga Now app and join one of the live workouts from the DDP Yoga Performance Center in Smyrna, Georgia. It's the next best thing to work it out in person with Dallas. And the app has everything. It's got over 150 workouts, nutrition tips, recipes, cooking shows, and tools to track your progress. It's got everything you need, folks. And it lets you do DDP yoga wherever and whenever you want, right from your smartphone or your tablet. And right now, you can get the app and the DVDs for 20% off. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Austin. Take advantage of this great sale, folks. 20% off the app, the DVDs, and all clothing at ddpyoga.com/Austin. It is time to own your life. Start today. ddpyoga.com/Austin.
Steve Austin. Steve Austin. Unleashed. Unleashed.
Okay, let's get back to the phones and talk to Rick in Los Angeles. Hey, Rick. How are you?
Steve, what's up, man?
Hey, man, what brings you to the show today? What do you want to talk about?
Well, Steve, you know, I've been listening since 2013, love the show, and I always like when you talk about the days in Central Florida when you used to tape WCW down there for weeks and months at a time. Who did you hang with back then, and how'd you pass the time, and how long were those WCW tapings? And also, I've heard you tell a story behind the picture on the bus, but there's this other picture that I've seen. It's you and Steamboat, Arn Anderson, and Regal, and Kevin Sullivan on the beach. So I was just wondering if there was any story behind that photo.
Man, as far as who I was hanging with at the time, for the most part, it was William Regal. He came down to WCW whenever he came in, and I watched that guy work a match. And I was like, you know, when I first saw him, I was like, oh, man, who's this guy from England? And all of a sudden, he goes out there and works. And I believe it was a match in Center Stage in Atlanta. And, man, he just lit it up. All his badass chain wrestling, you know, his work. And he was selling his ass off. And I was like, holy smokes, this guy's good. I went and introduced myself to him. I told him, I said, man, that was an awesome match. And, man, we bonded from that day forward. And we became just the best of friends and travel partners. So that's who I was hanging with to answer your question. To pass the time, because there was a lot of time to be passed, I wasn't exactly, you know, on the hot booking part of the show. Everybody else was getting pushed. I was just kind of there. And so we had a lot of time to kill. And we killed it by, well, I killed it by drinking a lot of damn whiskey and a lot of beer. And there used to be an English pub called Rover's Return in Kissimmee, Florida, right outside of Orlando. And me and William would stay out that neck of the woods. And we would go to Rover's Return, drink Guinness Stout, and throw darts every single night, all night. Then we get up, go to the gym, and then we go to the television tapings. That's the answer to that part of the question. As far as that picture, and we were all there at the beach that day, and we were just hanging out, and someone snapped that picture. And I'm guessing that picture is probably from about, I don't know, 93, 94, about 95, I was starting to get beat up. I was still in pretty good shape, it looked like then. Then I was going to tear that tricep off my arm before I headed to ECW and WWF. So I think that picture was give or take maybe 93, 94. And we were just hanging out on the beach, passing through, working our ass off, being pro wrestlers.
So, Steve, I mean, I know that's a popular state to live. Did you, at least for wrestlers, I should say, because of the state income tax, I know you live in Texas throughout your career. Did you ever consider living in Florida back in the day?
You know, a lot of the guys ended up down there in Tampa just because of the territory system back in the day. And then a lot of the WWF guys still live down there, and it was kind of a hotbed. And but just because it was a territory and because a lot of people like living there because of the weather and the taxes. For me, just a little too far south, but I always loved all those towns. And I particularly love Jacksonville, Florida. For some reason, that Coliseum in that damn town was just an awesome building. It was old school. It's probably still standing for all I know, but it had this great atmosphere in it. I never really thought about living in Florida. I was living in Atlanta at the time. That was a great hub to be based out of. You can make all the shots pretty damn easy with where we were taping at. But I'll never forget one time in Jacksonville, Florida. I'll give you a Brian Pillman story. We were working a six-man tag. I can't remember who everybody was. But one of the guys on my team was Brian Pillman, and one of the guys across the ring was Van Hammer. And we were working a match, and Brian was notorious for ribbing people. So he says, before he tags in, he goes, kid, watch this. And then he tags in, Van Hammer's in. Do you remember Van Hammer?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Okay, I mean, just a big guy, great body, good-looking guy, rock and roll gimmick. Man, they lock up. Pillman takes him in the corner. He says, no sell the chops. And Brian starts chopping the shit out of Van Hammer. And hell, about eight chops in, Hammer starts bleeding from his chest. That's how hard those chops were that Brian used to throw. All of a sudden, you know, Brian tells him, okay, hulk up. And Van Hammer hulked up, and Brian just flopped down and rolled out of the ring and pounded on him. And I was like, God damn you, sorry son of a bitch. He beat the shit out of Hammer's chest, had him hulk up, and when he hulked up, he took a powder on the kid. So I was like, God dang, only Brian would think of doing something like that. But that's the kind of guy Brian was. Back to your question. No, I was never going to live in Florida. Great state. Love to go down there. I dig the weather. Miami's a little humid for me. I prefer the Los Angeles kind of climate, and I'll never forget when we used to go down that building down there. It would be hotter than blazes and humid as a son of a bitch, but always a good time down there. Hey, man, I appreciate you calling into the show, Rick.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you. Let's go to Garrett in Minnesota. Yo, Garrett, what's happening?
Hi, Steve. How are you today?
Man, I'm doing good. What's happening? Hey, man, how long have you been listening to the show? How'd you get the information to call
in? I've been listening since the first episode.
God dang, it has been a cluster muck from day one and continues to be 4 years in. What do you want to talk about today, Garrett?
I was wondering, I go to a lot of conventions, and I get to meet a lot of celebrities and stuff. Like, I've met a lot of wrestlers like Ric Flair, Mick Foley. I got to meet Alice Cooper, Marilyn Manson, and I've been kind of I think Alice Cooper got me the most starstruck, and I was kind of wondering if there's ever been a time in your life where you've met someone that really had you kind of starstruck.
Man, that is a good question, and you caught me completely off guard, and right here, I've been hitting up so many steel chairs. I'm trying to think. I'm sure I have back in the day. Certainly not for the last 15, 20 years. I just don't, I mean, it's really nice to meet people that have done well, but I kind of take everything in stride. I'll tell you one guy, Garrett, and you're not going to believe this yet, but it's absolute truth. I was thrilled back when I was a kid. I think I was probably in sixth grade, and believe it or not, the world yo-yo champion came to Edna, Texas. His name was Bunny Martin. And I remember it's the first time I ever asked anybody for their autographs, and it's a true story. It's a straight-up shoot. I went over to Bunny. He finished his show. He'd done all kinds of badass tricks with the yo-yo. Hell, he was a world champion in Edna, Texas. Look him up. Hell, he's probably, he got to be 60, 70 years old because he was older than I was. So I stuck his piece of paper in front of him. I said, man, could you sign this? And I didn't say, can I have your autograph? Because at that young age, even then, I didn't want to say, can I have your autograph? I didn't want to say that. So I said, hey, man, could you sign this? And he wrote his name down. And believe it or not, I still have that damned autograph 45 years later. 45 years later.
Really?
Yep, damn right. So I can't say I've been starstruck in a long time, but Buddy Martin is my first autograph that I ever asked for, and I was nervous asking for his damn autograph.
Yeah, I bet. That's really cool.
Well, I don't know. It's cool, but that's a damn true story. Hey, man, I appreciate you listening to the show all these years.
Absolutely, Steve. Thanks for everything. I really appreciate it.
Hey, man, take care of yourself. I'll catch you down the road. Hey, Eric, how are you?
Hey, Steve, how you doing?
Man, I'm doing good. Hanging out over here in Los Angeles, California. You down there in San Antonio?
San Antonio, Texas. Keeping it real here.
Hey, man, I heard you guys got some rain down there.
Yeah, it's been raining, but right now it's a little cloudy, so I'm ready to hit some barbecue right now.
Where are you going for barbecue?
There's a place called Dickie's Barbecue Shop up by Alamo Ranch, so I'm trying to go there and see what the brisket's like.
God dang, I tell you what, it's been a long time since I had some good barbecue here on the streets of Los Angeles. That's one thing I miss about Texas and I miss about the Broken Skull Ranch is able to find good barbecue. Hey, man, let's talk about what you want to talk about. What'd you call for?
So I know you guys talk about ribs all the time, so I wanted to know if Vince McMahon has ever ribbed you.
Man, I saw that question on the monitor, and I was thinking, man, has Vince McMahon ever ribbed me? I'm sure he has. I'm probably not aware of some of them. Maybe some of them were payoffs. I don't know. And I say that's a rib. I'm kidding. Vince was always very generous to me as far as the payoffs go. One time we went out there. It was Lillian Garcia and myself. And I always like, you know, doing stuff with Lillian because she was so game and she was just willing to do anything out there. She's a very giving person out there. So I guess it was going to be the night when I sang the national anthem. You know, they could put the words on the teleprompter for me. And I started singing, but Lillian didn't start singing because she heard me and the way I started off, because I can't sing and I'm basically tone deaf, I was singing so far out of key that she said that she would have had to jump like 5 octaves to catch me. So when I was singing, I looked over at Lillian and she wasn't singing, so I'm thinking, hey, this is a setup. And as I'm thinking that, we're on live TV, man, this is Monday Night Raw, where you never let them see you sweat. And I'm thinking, all right, I just been had. And then finally she starts kicking in and trying to, you know, keep up on the way I started, just kind of screwed her up. But that's a rib that I thought was played on me in live TV. And I was like, God dang, you some bitch has got me.
Funny.
Hey, man, you got anything else?
Have you ever ribbed somebody, or what's the best rib that you've ever done to somebody else?
You know, I wasn't a big rib guy. I like to watch ribs unfold. I never was into the malicious stuff, guys, screwing somebody over. The old stuff that happens back in the days, like when we used to go to some of the old high schools or some of the National Guards, when you're in the dressing room, a lot of those dressing rooms had padlocks. And, you know, if there was any open padlocks, those guys that ribbed would get those padlocks, they'd go find a pair of pants, and they'd lace up all the belt loops and then put that combination lock on there and snap it shut. And then, you know, someone's either got their pocket knife cutting their belt loops off or doing something because you don't get that lock off and no one's running around with the bolt cutter. So I enjoyed seeing, you know, silly ribs like that. But really, honestly, unless somebody could tell me different, I'm sure I pulled a few ribs here and there. But I just wasn't a ribber, man. I didn't like the malicious stuff. I liked the fun stuff because the fun stuff kept everybody honest. You're out there strung out on the road. You beat up. You broke down. Who knows if you're making any money or not, depending on what territory you're in. And we were all having a blast and living the high life and having fun being pro wrestlers. But life on the road, sometimes when you see it on TV, it looks all glitzy and glamorous. But when you jump off in the middle of it and you got something pulled or something broke or you need a surgery or something get patched up, it can turn into be a real grind. And I always tell everybody, man, that pro wrestling was the best job I ever had. Now, it was tough as shit, but damn, it was fun doing. But to answer your question and be specific, I really wasn't a ribber. And if Vince ever pulled a rib on me, I thought it was that time when we were singing a national anthem.
I appreciate your time, and thanks for all the memories, and thanks for the award-winning podcast.
Some bitch ain't never won any awards, and I don't care if it ever does, because that way I can keep saying this podcast ain't never won a damn thing. Appreciate you calling in. Take care down there in Texas.
Take care.
Oh, yeah, let's go Jonathan Fresno. Hey, Jonathan, how are you?
Good. It's a pleasure to hear from you, sir. It's the first time ever speaking to you.
Hey, man, I appreciate you calling in from Fresno, California. Appreciate you staying on the hold button.
No problem.
What you want to talk about?
not too long, when I read your book, The Stone Cold Truth, with all these autobiography books coming up, especially Jim Ross, do you ever plan on writing up a follow-up book?
Man, I tell you what, when WWE wanted me to write that first book, I said, man, I don't want to do it. But then after I left the company for 6-8 months, whenever it was, when I walked out, took my ball and went home, you know, got back in with them. We buried the hatchet, and I figured, okay, I'll go ahead and write a book. So that's how that book was born. I never did really want to write a book. So when it came to the actual writing process, I sat down with Dennis Brent. I sat down with Jim Ross, a longtime friend. I flew to Oklahoma, stayed at his house. Jim and Dennis did a hell of a job in writing that book. But it was such a painful process. And you brought up Jim Ross. He's about to come out with his book. He asked me to write the foreword for him. And so I did. And it took me about 4 months. And Jim was calling me about every week, asking if I had done that foreword. Writing the foreword for one of my best friends, Jim Ross, was so painful. And I'm glad I did it. And I love Jim Ross. But for me to write another book, I quite simply don't have the attention span or desire to write anything else about what I've done.
Fair enough.
What else you got over in Fresno?
Not much. I mean, WWE comes here like twice a year. I try to get involved as much as I can. I'm just glad I was part of WrestleMania when they were in San Jose 2 years ago, so I finally made it to WrestleMania after 26 years as a WWE fan.
You been watching more Raw or SmackDown, or you watch both?
Both, whenever I can. But I was just glad to be part of WrestleMania. That's all that matters 2 years ago.
Yeah, man, WrestleMania has turned into a huge event. And these days, I remember back in the day, I think my first WrestleMania was actually in Los Angeles, California. And that's about an 18,000 seat arena. And these days, I mean, they're not playing to anything that is less than 65 or 70,000. So it has turned into an absolute spectacle. And it's just a blast how big this thing has become. And Vince McMahon's vision from back in the day from WrestleMania 1 to what it's turned into now is just unbelievable. And going to one and is a special thing as a fan, and much less being a performer in that ring in front of everybody as I was, is just an absolute blast and an honor. Hey, man, I appreciate you calling into the show.
Thank you, sir. It was a pleasure speaking with you. It's the first time ever, and I'm glad to talk to you, sir.
Take care, man. I'll catch you down the road. Let's go to Greensboro with Kevin.
Hey, Steve. Great to hear you.
Hey, man. Hey, calling from Greensboro, North Carolina. I appreciate you being so patient on the phone.
No problem, Will. Thank you for having me.
Talk to me a little bit.
Yeah, so actually just this past Saturday, I went to my first ever WWE live show, and it got me thinking, you know, North Carolina has so much pro wrestling history to it. I was just wondering, since, you know, I know you've been here quite a few times, if you had any good memories from the state to share.
Oh, man. Yeah, a lot of great memories. Are you calling from Greensboro?
Yes, sir.
Holy smokes. What's that, a Greensboro Coliseum there?
It is. I'm a whopping 5-10 minute drive down the road from it.
Man, you talk about one of the all-time favorite arenas. And, you know, to me, that was NWA territory. And for me, Flair kind of put that place on the map, because every now and then they'd do a television taping coming out of Greensboro, and that arena was just badass. And Flair was out there lighting it up. And, you know, he's from North Carolina. Well, from many, but billed from North Carolina. And in the Charlotte, where he was based out of, when you roll into Charlotte, you knew that was Flair country, and it was NWA country. And then, you know, even in South Carolina, but all those towns, whether it's North Carolina or South Carolina, because of where they were located, because of just the hotbed of wrestling that it was, the territory that it was just a great place to be. And those were some of the best crowds that you can work in front of, because, man, they love their wrestling. They believed in it. And as long as you're giving them good stuff, they're buying. Just go out there and execute, take them on a ride. And it was just a great time and a great place to be. But that is a hell of a damn state for pro wrestling.
Hell yeah. It's good to hear that you always enjoyed your time here too.
Man, I did. You got another question?
This one's a little bit more fitness related, but off the top of my head, I've been only hitting the gym since this past November. I've been doing a lot of weight training, but I was curious as to how important it is to get that cardio in.
Man, I tell you what, I'm glad you asked me that question, because I was talking to someone earlier. I had switched my nutrition around and started running a keto-type diet. But let's don't talk about diet, because it really doesn't matter. There's no magic bullet for food, in my opinion. It's putting the work in. I stopped doing cardio a while back, and that's kind of when I started noticing that I was putting the pounds back on, not in the places that I wanted it to be. So I just employed cardio. Shoot, I probably kicked it in about 5 days ago, and I've been consistent. 5 days is not very many, but I can already tell a difference just in those 5 days. So to me, if you're going to try to tone up or change some body composition or drop fat, you need to be at a caloric deficit. You need to watch. You don't need to be one of those people that weighs everything like I am, but that helps me manage everything. But to me, some people say, hey, don't do cardio. Just don't put it in. Eat less. And some people say, do cardio and jack up your food more so that you can, you know, work the calories out. I would rather feed myself a little bit more and use the calorie to help me go into a caloric deficit rather than starving myself and slowing my metabolism down. So to answer your question, for my body type, it's extremely important. What have you found?
Yeah, so I've noticed too, like I said, I'm still fairly early on in the game, especially compared to yourself. You know, I have noticed that it does help me drop those LBs, and then there's also a mental aspect to it as well. I think once you get going and you've been on there for a good 30, 45 minutes, and you got the Steve Austin show playing too, it just takes you to a better place.
Hey, man, I told my wife this morning, I walked in, I put in an hour this morning, and I walked back into the house. I've got an air assault bike. It's just like a stationary bike where the handles go back and forth. The kind you see the NFL football players riding on the sidelines. And right, I crank right. That thing up. I got the jams playing. I got the Pandora radio going. And I wasn't killing myself, but I just worked up a good sweat. And I walked in. I told my wife, I said, God damn, I said, I don't know why I stopped doing cardio. Because to your point, it just makes you feel good. I mean, that just that sweat for me. Get all the toxins, all the bullshit, whatever, out of your body and just sweat a little bit. And I miss that. There's been times in my life where I was like a Dracula to a cross. I hated cardio, but I was getting a shit pile of it in the ring once we fired up and started wrestling every night. For me, it's kind of essential. So I'm glad I got it back in my life.
Well, I'm glad to hear that too.
Hey, man, stick with it. And the biggest thing is, in whatever you're doing, is consistency. Keep pounding the weights. Vary your cardio a little bit. Some long sessions, some short sessions, steady state, a little bit of a high intensity type stuff. Just mix it up. And if you always stick with it, watch what you're eating, watch the sugar calories on the drinks and the bullshit, and just consistency is the key.
That sounds good to me, Steve. Hey, I tell you what, you are the greatest to ever open up a can of whoop-ass in the ring and the greatest to ever open up a can of audio whoop-ass on the podcast. I've been loving the show for years, and I'm hoping there's many more years to come.
I'm going to keep laying them down if you'll keep downloading them. I appreciate you calling in, Kevin.
Twice a week. Thank you, Steve.
Take care, man. Let's go to Eric in Minnesota. Hey, Eric, how are you?
Good. How are you, Steve?
What do you want to talk about tonight?
I'd like to talk to you about Terry Funk.
All right. What do you want to talk about?
I've been watching different matches of his through like the late 80s into the early 2000s, and it always seems to me that, you know, depending on who he's facing and how he throws his advancement in years. It's like whoever he's facing, he can wrestle with the best of them, like with Ric Flair, and he can brawl with the best of them with Mick Foley. I just watched a match that he did with Chris Candido in WCW in 2000, and I guess I really enjoyed it because it showed me that, you know, like the different layers that Terry Funk can do, and I just wanted to get your thoughts on Terry Funk's career.
Well, first of all, he had an outstanding run, and he's one of my favorites. I mean, that guy had a mean streak in him as a heel, and he could talk so much trash. And you really, in any promo he did, I don't think he could cut a bad promo. And some of those promos he cut in ECW were just lights out. I loved his work in Japan, working with his brother Dory as a tag team or in singles. Sometimes when they'd tag up against Stan Hansen, Bruiser Brody. I like that style of his in-ring stuff. Some classic matches with Ric Flair, though. I mean, like you said, he could do it all. He could wrestle or he could brawl. And, you know, being what, second or third generation guy, Dory was kind of really the technician of the family. And then Terry was like, I don't know what you'd call it, this wildfire, just this spark about him that was just very spontaneous, and he could just light up a crowd. And he was just very authentic and very genuine. And when he was kicking somebody's ass, you believed it. When somebody was kicking his ass, you believed it. And so he was just great at making you suspend your disbelief, because when Terry Funk wrestled, it looked like a shoot. And he would throw in some of those over-the-top mannerisms that were a little over-the-top, but they were still acceptable. But I don't know that anybody could have been able to get away with them, like those random punches when he's in sell mode, whether he's working heel or baby, just stuff like that. I thought it was badass.
One thing I always enjoyed, too, that you kind of didn't fully get to is I feel like he had that charisma that can connect with any crowd at any time period in any territory, wherever he wrestled at.
Well, he was one of those guys, when he picked up a horn, you never knew what he was going to say. So, like, you always get these people say, oh, man, who's your top three or top five promos? There's so many guys that are on the list these days. And, you know, it's not even, you can't even make a list. Terry Funk is one of the great talkers in the history of the business. But, yes, to your point, just totally charismatic. As a heel, he had something that just like, hey, man, this summit is really crazy. I think, you know, maybe I thought wrestling was fake, but this dude he's serious. There's something that's really scary about him. Then as a baby, I mean, when he was selling, you believed him, and he just had that, he had the believability. You can't teach, I'm going back to what Enzo Amore would say, you can't teach certain things. You can't teach charisma. Terry Funk had it in spades, and he had the workmanship and the showmanship to go along with it, and that's why he had such a hell of a damn run.
Do you have any fun road stories that you've had with Terry Funk over the years?
No, man, I remember I wrestled Terry, I think it was San Antonio, on a shotgun Saturday night. I don't even remember the damn match. Hell, I think I was starting to get hot back then. But, you know, you step in the ring with Terry Funk, you're stepping in there with a damn legend. And it was like an honor. And, hell, I just got off the phone, and someone asked me if I'd ever been starstruck. And I wasn't starstruck when I met Terry, but I was like, shit, that's Terry F. and Funk right there. And all of a sudden the bell rings and you're doing business with that guy. It's like, hey, man, this is pretty damn cool. So I just remember bits and pieces of things with him. I've been hitting him with so many steel chairs and a lot of shit I don't remember. But I just remember having fun. And one of the things I remembered about Terry was a few times I got to just sit down with him and drink a couple of cold beers and shoot the shit. And he's just a cool dude. He understands every aspect, every element of the business of professional wrestling. And he's one of the great minds in the history of the business and one of the great performers as well. I got nothing but good things to say about that guy.
Yeah, like you mentioned, I've always appreciated as a fan his psychology, depending on who he's facing, from, you know, ECW to Japan, like you mentioned. I guess as a fan, I don't know who... I think there's very few people who had the psychology part down better than Terry Funk.
Well, that's an interesting thing that you bring that up, because as much psychology as Terry had, when he started going to Japan and doing all those hardcore matches with Mick Foley, who's a very good friend of mine and my former travel partner, and they started doing all those crazy hardcore matches, and hell, he started doing that damn moonsault, and I was like, what in the hell is Terry doing? He's one of the most scientific, best brawlers in the history of the business. Now he's taking on an aerial assault, and he was just tearing his body up. So with all the psychology that he brought to the business, it really baffled me when he started doing those matches with Mick. Now, don't get me wrong, there were some badass matches, and there was psychology in those matches the way they built them. But watching that guy punish his body and punish Mick the way those two did was just unbelievable. Well, here's how smart he was. And speaking of psychology, taking, you know, all of his tools into ECW and just to go into that barbaric territory that he went in ECW, he's probably the godfather of the extreme style.
For sure. Yeah, I guess that's all I have, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, man, I appreciate you calling into the show. Thanks for listening.
All right, everybody, give me the go-home cue. It's time to wrap up this podcast and ride off in the sunset. Before I do, I want to say thanks again to everybody who called into the studio a few weeks back. I got a few more phone calls left to air, and we'll get to those in a couple of weeks. And like I said, I'm hoping to do more call-in shows in the future, but I will come up with a specific topic or subject for us to talk about. So thank you one more time for calling in. And now it is time for a video of the week. And after that last call with Eric in Minnesota talking about Terry Funk, I found a couple of short videos on YouTube of Terry cutting promos. If you just put Terry Funk promos in the search bar, it'll pull up several of them. But the one that I like the most, and the payoff is at the end of the promo, fancy that, but check out the one that says Terry Funk, Eddie Gilbert promo, 5/4/1993. It's some good shit. I popped at the end. So check that out. Terry Funk is an absolute legend. I have nothing but the highest respect for that guy. Tough as nails. Great worker. Great entertainer. Great promo. Fuck, he was a great pro wrestler. End of story. Bottom line. Check it out. Hey, ProWrestlingTees.com/Steve Austin has all the shirts that I wore in previous seasons of Broken Skull Challenge, and now that we're starting Season 5, we'll have a bunch of new t-shirt designs available soon. The show starts airing in September on CMT. Boy, I tell you what, if you're thirsty, like I am, the best damn IPA on planet Earth is Broken Skull IPA at El Segundo Brewing Company, and you can get Broken Skull IPA at Whole Foods and Total Wines if you live in California. If you ain't in Cali, check InsideTheCellar.com and see if they ship to your state. And if you're looking to get either the cold steel Broken Skull knife or the new Working Man knife, you can get them at my new Amazon store. Amazon has the best prices on both knives. Just go to Amazon.com/shop/Steve Austin. I've got to say one more thank you to all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free. And you can find all my sponsors at PodcastOne.com. Just click on the Killer Deals button at the top of the page and then click on the Steve Austin Show banner. Folks, if you want to follow me on Twitter and Instagram, I am Steve Austin, BSR. Until next time, folks, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
Thanks for listening to Steve Austin Unleashed. Catch new episodes every Thursday on the Podcast One app or subscribe at Apple Podcasts or PodcastOne.com.